Now on Sports Talk, it's SC Wild with Major Billy Downer of the Department of Natural Resources. Major Downer is here to take your questions about the great outdoors in South Carolina. Give him a call at 888-898-2525. It's SC Wild from DNR on the Sports Talk Radio Network.
All right, welcome back, everybody, and welcome into another edition of SC Wild from DNR here on Sports Talk. Our phone number, 888-898-2525, South Carolina Education Lottery. Lucky number into SC Wild tonight. If you have a question for what you're about to hear or a comment, feel free to give us a call. We'll put you in touch with Major Billy Downer and his guests tonight. You can also follow us on Twitter and ask a question there. We'll pass that on to the Major as well. Let's welcome in from DNR, Major Billy Downer. Good evening, sir. Good to have you with us once again.
Always a pleasure to be with you tonight, Phil. Tonight we have a very special guest, good friend, and our Chief of Freshwater Fisheries, Ross Self. Hey, Ross. We're going to talk about something we've never talked about on the show a little bit, Phil, tonight. It's just kind of the state of the state for freshwater fisheries for a little bit.
Okay.
Ross is a plethora of information. Big word for you there. He loves to talk fish. Ross, give us a. One of the things I know people talk about all the time is they don't realize or they ask, do we still maintain hatcheries and what do we do with those hatcheries?
Bill, we still operate hatcheries across the state. We currently have five that are operational, and one hatchery that we're working on bringing back online over in Barnwell. We have warm water hatcheries up in Heath Springs and in Sherall here in Columbia out at Pine Ridge, Spring Stevens or Heath Springs up in Lancaster County, and then the Dennis Wildlife Center down in Bono. And we produce a variety of fish species primarily for stocking into public waters to support recreational fishing. We produce a lot of striped bass. We stock between 4 and 5 million stripers a year into our state's reservoirs. Another major effort that's ongoing right now as we speak is efforts to restore American shad. So we have two facilities that are producing American shad fry. And I think as of today, we're probably between 3 and 4 million shad fry going out the door into a couple of areas in the state. But we work collaboratively with the Fish and Wildlife Service. They have a hatchery in Orangeburg that provides some additional capacity for us. And this year we're actually sharecropping, if you will, with the Fish and Wildlife Service at hatcheries in Arkansas and down in Florida, where they're providing some space to grow some stripers for us, and they'll send the majority of those fish back to South Carolina for our public water stocking.
So where are stripers produced? Is that not at Dennis Center where most of the stripers are produced?
All the stripers that are spawned at the Jack Bayless hatchery. It's on the rediversion canal in St. Stephens. That is just a spawning facility where we actually bring the adult male and female stripers into the hatchery and induce them to spawn. We'll strip the eggs and fertilize the eggs and incubate the eggs there. When they hatch into fry, we'll hold them for 3 or 4 days there at Bayless, and then those are shipped to all our warm water facilities across the state for production. It takes all the space we have to produce a number of stripers we need every spring to meet our management request. And then again, we rely on the Fish and Wildlife Service for some additional space to help meet our demand.
So Ross, what size are stripers when we put them out?
That usually disappoints people when they hear that.
Put it out there.
Our stripers go out the door to public waters at about 35 days from hatch. So they're going to be about between 2 and 3 inches. They're pretty small, not that impressive when they leave on the truck, but hopefully much more impressive when they come home on the truck later.
Got it. Exactly. And Phil, just to be clear, we're not talking about a fish fry. We're talking about baby fish, basically, okay? the infant yeah. fish, if you will.
I'm with you.
They look a whole lot like pepper flakes.
But the great thing about baby fish, right, is that they do grow up to be adult fish at some point.
They do.
Absolutely. So, Ross, what else do we – I know you'll want to talk about the robust red horse.
Yeah, that's a large sucker that lives in rivers. It looks a whole lot like a carp, but it's a whole different family of fish. We have several species of red horse, but the robust red horse was at one point thought to be extinct. It was described from the PD River drainage back in the 1800s, and then it wasn't really seen again. It was relied on back in those days as a food fish. A lot of settlers, would catch those in the rivers and would use those as a food source. But as habitat degradation occurred, during cotton farming and whatnot, we had a lot of sediment entering streams. It kind of covered up their spawning areas. They ate freshwater mussels. We lost a lot of mussels during that time period, so that species went into major decline and was thought to be lost. But back in the early 90s, it was rediscovered in a little river over in Georgia. And Georgia DNR, South Carolina DNR, North Carolina DNR joined together with the Fish and Wildlife Service to form a cooperative effort to try to restore the species in lieu of having it listed as endangered. And we've been fairly successful so far. We've established two populations in South Carolina, in the Watery River and in the Broad River, from fish that we produced in hatcheries and reintroduced, and those fish have reached the age where we're starting to see spawning activity from those fish that came out of the hatcheries to help reestablish that population in the wild and preclude it from being listed as endangered moving forward.
So not necessarily a game fish, but we are helping the environment continue as far as a species not be extinct.
That's right. That is true.
All right. So I know there are folks that may be listening to that tape that know we do some release of trout. Can you talk shortly about that? What
sure.
What do we do with trout in the state?
We have one trout hatchery in the state. It's up in Wahala, almost as far to the northwest as you can go and still be in South Carolina. And at that facility, we grow rainbow, brown, and brook trout. Those fish are a little bit unique in that we don't stock those as fingerlings generally. We usually grow those out at the facility to what we consider a catchable size. And for a trout, that's 9-10 inches long. So most of those fish are in that 9-10 inch range when they leave the hatchery up there. But we're producing and stocking between 600,000 and 700,000 trout. In appropriate waters in the state. Most of those trout waters are in Oconee, Pickens, and Greenville County. We do have a trout fishery here in Columbia in the lower Saluda below Lake Murray. But that facility was built back by the fishing. It was a Fish and Wildlife Service facility, and they operated it to the mid 90s, and it was slated for closure as part of some of the federal budget cuts back in the day, and the General Assembly joined with us, and we were able to secure that facility from Fish and Wildlife Service. It passed over to state operation in the mid 90s, and we've been operating it ever since.
Wow. So just kind of recap, 600,000-700,000 trout released every year. How many striped bass? Did you say 4 or 5 million?
About 5 million stripers, yeah.
A year?
Hmm.
A year. So our general,
wow.
Generally with all species, not really counting the fry that go out for American shad, but we're generally producing somewhere between 10 and 12 million fish for public water stocking every year in our hatchery system.
Okay. So outside of the fish we've mentioned, are there any other fish that we go out to be releasing into the public water?
We do grow some catfish, some channel catfish that are used to support fishing rodeos, and we use those
sure.
fish to supplementally stock some of our small impoundments that the agency operates through our state lakes right. program. These are small impoundments, usually 300 acres or less, that offer bank fishing opportunities and fishing pier opportunities for folks that might not have boats. But we have 18 right. of those facilities across the state, and we grow some catchable catfish that we stock in those areas to support those recreational fishing opportunities.
All right, and then flatfish wise, didn't we used to do some stuff with redbreast in the day back in the day, or is that continued?
We do, and we are still growing some redbreast. We grow some on our facilities, and again, we borrow some space from some Fish and Wildlife Service facilities, but we're targeting between 1.5 million and 2 million redbreast a year that go into our coastal rivers where those populations have been impacted to some extent by the expansion of flathead catfish that have invaded the state.
Sure, and I've seen some of the smaller, Black River, when they get up to the smaller tributaries, they're there also. I know we used to help yeah. way back in the day in Clarendon County putting some redbreast out in some really small, what I would consider small river systems, but are huge to local communities, so...
Absolutely. You know, those redbreast are a real cultural icon in the South Carolina coastal plain. Those are sure. highly prized and valued population in those areas. They and they're pretty doggone good eating too, Billy.
Okay, they are. They absolutely are. But so Ross, one of the things that I know about from a standpoint of funding for our fisheries, a lot of people, they hear us talk about Pittman-Robertson dollars. They've heard me talk about that for years on the show. So let's drift on the other side of things that I know you know a lot about. Dingle Johnson, how does that help us in our fisheries so the people that are listening that may not ever understand how we pay for all these fish that we grow and our staff that work so hard to grow them? Tell us a little bit of history on Dingle Johnson.
Well, that's a federal act that redirected an excise tax on fishing equipment. It was passed back in, I think, 1950, and it was later amended with a thing called a Wallet-Breaux Amendment in 1985 that transferred some gas tax money that's attributable to outboard motors and small engines into this National Aquatic Resource Trust account. That's apportioned back to the states based on the size of the state and the number of fishing licenses sold. And collectively that's known as sport fish restoration dollars. And those are a critical component of our freshwater fisheries management in the state. They probably make up about 40% of our operations in freshwater fisheries. They support our hatchery operations in many places. They support our regional operations where we are monitoring the fish populations and making those management recommendations on size and krill limits as well as stocking requests. So that is critical. And that's an excise tax that's paid by the manufacturers on a number of fishing related items, soft plastics, rods and reels, et cetera. That essentially, the anglers and the folks that enjoy the outdoors that buy these things, their purchase helps contribute to that fund through this excise tax that the manufacturers pay on the products they sell. And then equally important are those dollars from the license sales that occur and the number of licenses we sell that help determine how much of that federal money will come back to South Carolina. And we have to match it. We have to match it 25%. So for every dollar... For every 75 cents we get from the Fed from sport fish restoration, we have to match it with a quarter. So,
just like Pittman-Robertson.
Just like Pittman-Robertson. It was modeled after Pittman-Robertson because PR had been so successful in its first few several years. But I'm glad you brought that up. That's a critical piece.
So for me, it was an opportunity to make sure that folks, because again, they've heard about Pittman-Robertson so much, I want them to hear about, everybody that shoots guns, ammunition, goes to the range. We've talked about that, is how that goes back into our range program, goes back into hunter education, hunting. But I think it's equally important because I know it's your life. It's been your life for how many years now?
A long time.
A long, long time. You're an old guy.
Long time. Yeah, I'm kind of long in the tooth.
So they sit in the, you know, they're buying their rods, they're buying reels, they're buying all that fishing tackle and equipment. Understand that their purchase goes back because of the license sales as well, and buying that fishing license is so important to the formula to help us fund all the things we're talking about tonight. You know,
I
don't think people realize that we release 4 to 5 million stripers. I don't think they know that we release 1 to 2 million redbreasts. Those just are phenomenal numbers.
When you see those numbers on paper, it still kind of takes me aback. And I've been doing this a long time. It's kind of amazing to me how many fish we are able to produce and get out through our hatchery program. The anglers are such a key part of that. The anglers and the industry that produces that equipment that they buy, those are two critical components in the conservation of our aquatic resources in the state because of the funds that are associated with their activities.
Right, and to be clear, this is freshwater we're talking about. This is only freshwater. We're not talking about saltwater. This is freshwater fishing.
That's true.
So
now you know the marine program does get a share of those sport fish restoration dollars. That money is split between fresh and saltwater interests in the state. But the numbers, the stocking numbers I'm talking about, are only the freshwater related. That's correct.
Absolutely. All right. So, Ross, is there any of our game fish that are of concern to us that we're looking at now? If people were to ask, you know, is there a game fish right now that we're concerned about? Is there one?
You know, our game fish in general are in pretty good shape. You know, we continue to watch what's going on with redbreast because of this impact from flathead expansion. You know, we have concerns about our black bass, you know, our largemouth bass in the state, because of the expansion of the non-native Alabama bass or spotted bass, some folks refer to them as, but that Alabama bass has been introduced into the state through some mystical means and is expanding into reservoirs all across the state, starting to show up, and we continue to find it in new places. But once it gets into a system, it'll displace some of the largemouth and can have more direct impact on some of our other native black bass too. But and you know, they don't have quite the growth potential of a largemouth. So they kind of go gangbusters the first few years, but then they kind of reach this equilibrium where the general size of bass in the system gets a little smaller because they're taking up space that would normally be occupied by largemouth.
So are they more aggressive feeding, or are they just taking up space?
They're taking up space, and they're competing for food resources and taking up space. And then with, you know, we have a little native black bass called the red-eye bass. That's only found in the Savannah drainage, essentially in South Carolina, and spotted bass will hybridize with our native red eye to the point that they pretty much eliminate the red eye from areas where they expand into, and what's left after you have it forms this thing called a hybrid swarm, and after 3 or 4 years, what you're left with is a small black bass in these rivers that is more nearly a pure spotted bass. And very little red eye traits left, so it kind of eliminates red eye from the system. And you know, we're spending a fair amount of time and effort looking at our red eye, trying to identify where we have pure red eye populations, and trying to maintain the separation of those groups from spots, and beginning to talk about management tools that we may be able to employ to kind of push back against the expansion of spotted bass.
Very cool. So I guess before we end tonight, we have a question from a listener.
We do.
Put them on?
We do. Right. We do. Well, he messaged me the question, and it is, I got to find it here once again. The question is a little bit off. Well, it's on fishing, but not about the nursery side of it, I guess. Question is, what's the best river for catfish noodling?
Catfish noodling. You know, that the you know, personally, I've never
participated
in noodling, but I know
good
people who have. What was that, Billy?
I said, where isn't a good place to catfish noodle? If you got catfish, and let's define what catfish noodling is. For folks that may not know what that is, that's people who literally go under the water and stick their arm up in holes and stick their hand and their fist up into the mouth of a catfish and grab it by the gills and pull it out.
Yeah, it's hand-to-hand fishing.
Hand-to-hand fishing.
It absolutely is. And I know somebody, and you know somebody that does that, Ross. That they go up under these landings where these old, like where some of these concrete landings are in backyards, and they go up under the landing where catfish will lay, and they'll stick their hand up in there and feel the fish and put the fist up in their mouth. And that's just not something I'm willing to do when I can't see.
Me either. But, you know, catfish tend to stay in little cavities like that up under cut banks or under tree stumps or even in old boxes or tires or whatnot you may find out in the water. But, so, Billy's right. You know, most anywhere you can noodle. Where I hear folks noodling the most often is up on Lake Thurman, Long Cane, a little river arm up in the rivers. There's tributaries to Lake Thurman or Clark Hill. I've known several people that go that do a lot of that in there, but any place you can find a place that's got some undercut banks or some watered out places under the surface of the water, you can be successful noodling.
Now, let me ask you a question. You know anybody who went noodling and like stuck their arm in there and came out, let's say, with less of an arm or fewer fingers?
All right, Phil, there's not confirmed on that. But we have had an incident where someone had been noodling and they stuck their arm into a gator's mouth.
Oh, that's
where you were going.
I wasn't, but my goodness. And like, how much of the arm came back?
Well, I mean, not too much.
Oh,
It, again, catfish noodling is fun, but that's why I wouldn't do it. I'm not going to do it because the same hole the catfish sit up in there, a gator would get up in a hole too and sit underwater.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
And, you know, I've heard similar stories associated with beavers that may be up in those holes and maybe a little piece of finger come up missing.
Honey, look what I brought home for dinner and look what didn't come back with me.
Noodling is not for the weak of heart.
Oh.
Yep. You got to be strong, for sure.
One more question from me. Now, I know you've been talking strictly about freshwater fishing here, but, you know, 2 weeks ago we were talking about the concern over the lack of flounder being developed, I guess, born, raised, you know, off the coast. What about that? Is that part of what you do as well? I mean, I know not in the hatchery, from a hatchery standpoint, but do you concern yourself with that as well?
You know, my focus is freshwater resources. We have another marine division that deals with our marine resource issues like that. But I know they are working diligently on this flounder issue. You know, there's some legislation being bantered about that may come to pass in the next year or so to help address some of that. But that's a topic that's fresh on the tongues of all our marine resources brethren. That's a hot topic for them right now, and they're working towards some solutions there that'll make things a little better, hopefully.
Well, you know, Ross, I want to thank you for coming on tonight. I know we don't have much more time left, Phil. I'd like to have Ross come back again because I think there's a lot of people would like to hear about striped bass a little bit more. Ross, talk about hybrids, talk about the white bass. We can get into that. I'd like to kind of talk about that because a lot of people like to know, you know, where are white bass? And then, you know, then there's the white perch and all that that could go into a probably 15-minute discussion. But anyway, thanks again for being a part of the show tonight.
Yes, sir. I appreciate the invitation. It's good being with you guys.
Thank you. Thank you, Major. Great job as always. You are a star.
We enjoyed it, so thank you.
Thank you so much. Major Billy Downer. In fact, if you look at his badge is a star for his DNR badge. So he is a star. And thank you to Chief Ross Self. That is SC Wild on Sports Talk tonight. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you tomorrow night right here on Sports Talk.